You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, series 4, episode 11 tonight. And I'm delighted to have another new co-host with me tonight, a special guest. It's David Lennon from Dundalk and we're recording this socially distant here in Dundalk. David, how are you keeping?
Not so bad, Kieran. How are you?
Look, a couple of weeks since we done our last show, David, and there's been an awful lot happening in those last couple of weeks, particularly up here in Dundalk. What was your initial reaction when you heard...
You nearly swear you had this planned.
what was your initial reaction when you heard Vinnie Perth and left his post?
I was devastated. I mean, the job Vinny has done over the last year or year and a half or so has been phenomenal, you know. To be a penalty shootout away from winning the clean sweep was naturally unheard of. But if everything is to be believed in terms of losing some of the faith in the dressing room and such like, and of course team selection issues with the management higher up, then it was writing on the wall very, very early on. And it didn't really come as that much of a surprise, although it did when it happened, if that makes sense.
Does it explain a lot of kind of the form post-lockdown? Because I think when you're having discussions about their performances, everyone was saying, what's wrong with Dundalk? There's something not right. You could see the players were very, very flat. And as you suggest there and allude to, and we'll be hearing from James Rogers later on. He's one of our guests tonight. He'll tell us a little bit more about this. But there is a feeling that maybe Vinnie Perth, despite the amazing job he done, and I'd be a huge fan of Vinnie and I'd have very few negative things to say about him, but there is a feeling that maybe he did lose a couple of players and senior players in that dressing room.
Yeah, and I mean, if that is the case, it's very hard to gain that trust back and get everyone back on side. And ultimately, you know, one of the biggest things with Dundalk over the last number of years has been the consistency and also has been the
team spirit, camaraderie.
Yeah, the players haven't changed. Yeah. You know, the starting 11 has evolved as opposed to, you know,
five or six players coming in and out. Yeah,
exactly. So when you lose that bit of trust, I suppose, it can be very hard to get back and ultimately it costs Vinny the job.
Yeah, look, our guest tonight, as I said, James Rogers will be on very shortly to discuss the European draws, which have happened over the last couple of days. We'll be discussing the situation at Dundalk off the pitch in more depth as well. We're going to be joined by Dean Arrowsmith all the way from the States. He's going to be talking about a very, very important matter. He's involved with a new group who are going to be promoting mental health within the League of Ireland. So looking forward to speaking to Dean about that. And we'll have post-match interviews from last night's game in Longford. Longford 3-1 winners against Wexford. Dara Doyle and Aaron McCabe, who's found a bit of fame overnight with his amazing goal. It's heading towards 30,000 views already on social media. So I'm sure you've already seen that. And we'll be hearing from the young man himself after he scored that phenomenal goal to help Longford on the way to the win. But David, we'll start with looking back at the cup results from the weekend. And we'll start with Dundalk, because this was Filippo's first game in charge. And what did you make of it? A 2-0 win against Cove on what was a very, very poor pitch.
Yeah, it was. I mean, look, it was a steady Eddie performance, I thought. The players turned up. They tried to play football. They tried to play to their, what shall we say, qualities. And also they evolved to the pitch. And when you could see that, you know, that the bobbles and everything that was going on the ground, they changed the game up and they went a little bit longer, and you had David McMillan, of course, coming in for Pat Hoban. That really played, I felt, to Dundalk's strengths and thoroughly deserved the win, really.
That was a very interesting subplot that we weren't expecting, because, as you said, Hoban was named in the starting 11 and McMillan had to come in at the last minute, but he seemed to have a really good game in terms of his hold-up play. Obviously, he scored from the spot as well, his first goal since he came back to the club, so that'll do him the world of good. But his overall play, he seemed to give Dundalk a real outlet and a real focal point. Do you think now he'll be putting real pressure on Pat Hoban for that number 9 jersey?
Absolutely. I mean, look, that's what he was brought in for. I've always rated David McMillan as a hold-up player and as a goal scorer. And if he can apply a lot more pressure on Pat Hoban, it's only going to have major benefits for Dundalk in the long run. I thought, you know, he took his penalty very, very well, albeit it shouldn't have been a penalty, but we'll take our little bit of luck. And Dane Massey's goal was an excellent finish as well. So, look, you know, after the last couple of weeks, from a Dundalk perspective that I've been through and everyone else associated with the club, it was a much needed boost.
Yeah, and Dane Massey in particular had a very, very good game, and he's probably one of the players that looked he looked off colour in recent weeks. He didn't look the Dane Massey we've come to know down the years. So it was good to see him back in the form of old. Gannon came off the bench then as well. Obviously, he got a knock in Europe, so it remains to be seen whether, you know, he can get his way back into that team or whether it was just because he had a knock, that's the reason he didn't start. But other players that came in, Will Patching was very, very good. He'll put pressure on the likes of McElhenney. Obviously, McElhenney's had his injury issues down the years. So already there's a few positives for Filippo to work with there.
Absolutely. And I mean, look, Patrick McElhenney has probably been one of the players over the last couple of weeks that actually has seemed like he's playing, getting back to where he was. And even in the European fixture, I thought he was probably our best player on the pitch. I mean, ultimately, the corner has been turned now, and hopefully this is the beginning of a new era for Dundalk Football Club.
Yeah, and I think what we'll do now, we'll get James Rogers on the phone, and he's going to tell us about how we've reached this point, I suppose. As I said, it was a couple of weeks since we'd done our last show, because I was on holidays myself.
Picked a good week to go, didn't you?
I did. That's so much happened in the week away. It was a little bit like last year when we had to stop doing the podcast for a couple of months, because obviously I moved up here and we were kind of figuring out how we were going to do it remotely, and the world of Irish football seemed to crumble with the Delaney sag and everything. It was just typical that was the time we had decided to take a little break, and same again, went away last week and everything.
Maybe it's your fault.
Maybe it is. Maybe I need to keep doing these shows. But yeah, let's hear from James Rogers. He's going to give us a little more info on what's happened over the last couple of weeks. So there's been plenty of developments, particularly at Dundalk, since we did our last show a fortnight ago. And James Rogers guest hosted one of the shows with me recently. I've got James back on the line with me now to discuss what's going on behind the scenes at Dundalk. And in the last couple of minutes as well, there's been the draw for the third round of the Europa League qualifiers. So if Dundalk come through against Andorra in opposition, they'll be heading, they won't be heading to Moldova because it's not on the green list, but they've got a Moldovan opposition, and James is going to tell us about that now. James, what did you make of that European draw in the last couple of moments?
I mean, listen, it's a tricky one, I suppose. You know, Moldovan football, we wouldn't know a lot about it. But Sheriff have done well in recent years to beat the dominant team in their league. And from what I gather, they've started this year off quite well. I think they've 8 wins from 8 in the Moldovan league and scored 23 and only conceded 1. They only lost to Karabag 2-1 in the last round. So, you know, they're a decent side. Their coefficient would be well ahead of Dundalk or any other Irish side for that, but at the same time, I don't think their team maybe you should fear. If you can get past Interclub, you know, in a one-legged tie, and particularly it's likely to be a neutral venue, you know, you have a real chance. Again, if Dundalk are, you know, at full steam at that stage, and that's what you'd be hoping for, but you know, it's by no means a gimme. But I think, I was just saying to you off air there, like the stage last year they were playing slow from Bratislava, and I don't think, with all due respect to Sheriff, they're in that category. So it is a kinder draw, there's no doubt, than the Dundalk had at the stage last year.
Yeah, of course, as you touch on there, they will have to get past Andorra in opposition, Club Inter, and many people, when they just hear the name Andorra, they expect a win against you know, a footballing nation that hasn't had any success down the years. But as you said, it's a one-legged tie. If Dundalk go out there and they don't play well, you're always vulnerable to a set piece, and you don't have the luxury then of bringing them back to Oriel, where you would be expecting probably a convincing 3-4, maybe even a 5-0 win. But they don't have that luxury to fall back on. If they don't perform on the night, they could go out of Europe in what would be humiliating circumstances.
Yeah, I suppose that's a real tricky one. Like, while Dundalk will be rightfully the red hot favourites, I mean, it's one that if you don't give them the respect they deserve, you could be caught out very quickly. Again, a bit like Celje in the last round. Interclub, they won their first Andorran league last year, and you know, a lot of experience in that team. You go through it, I think they've 8 or 9 Andorran internationals, including Ildefons Lima, who has 128 international caps. Now, I know Andorra wouldn't be by any means powerhouse of international football, but you do have guys who are used to playing on big stages, and two other players actually got a goal against Ireland in 2001 and 2002 World Cup qualifiers, and so did Christian Martinez in roughly 10 years ago, actually September 2010, in the Euro 2012 qualifiers. So I mean, these are guys who are used to playing at a sort of reasonably high level. You know, there's a few foreign players as well. Their Argentinian fullback Federico Bisogni, he's played for the likes of Swansea, Leeds, Charlton, Swindon, and Millwall. You know, in England now, only maybe a handful of appearances for each club, but it's, you know, still a reasonably high level. And as much as Dundalk will be fancied for that, I don't think it's a game they can maybe take for granted either.
Yeah, and aside from all of the drama of Europe in recent weeks, of course, there's been an awful lot of goings on behind the scenes at Dundalk since we've last done our show. Vinnie Perth has left his role. John Gill has left the club. It hasn't been confirmed anywhere, but plenty of reports online that Alan Reynolds has also left the club after a short stint there. And obviously, the two new Italian managers have come in. What have you made of all the goings on behind the scenes at Oriel? I know you wrote a very good piece yourself, kind of outlining how we reached this point.
Yeah, that show just seems like it just feels like so long ago now, to be honest. Just so much has happened. I suppose that we came back after the restart, and you know, the form wasn't good, the mood wasn't good, and I mean, people will have their own opinion on whether Vinnie Perth should have went or not. Personally, like, kind of knowing what was going on in the background, I was actually amazed the board even gave him the European tie, to be honest with you. I think when you start interfering with team selection and things like that, I think it's a clear sign you maybe don't have faith in your manager, or, you know, in any position. I think, you know, even in our own day-to-day jobs, if you take guidance from your bosses, I think if you have a specialist role and someone who, you know, is above you, who doesn't have that sort of, you know, background, if they start basically telling you how to do your job, you know, I think you'd consider moving on yourself. So I think when there was a game there with a 400 grand pot basically for the winner, you know, it's a lot in League of Ireland terms, basically the equivalent of winning the league for the next 4 years. I was surprised to give it to him. So it didn't maybe come as much of a surprise when they broke, you know, contract with Vinnie at the end of that game. You know, obviously a lot has come out then about the goings on behind the scenes, and okay, they're not ideal, but look, a new manager has been put in. He probably wouldn't have been on anyone's radar because it was so unknown, I think. But you know, from what I gather, they've made a good first impression on the players. They've enjoyed the session so far, and I think he described himself after the Cove game on Sunday that it was beautiful that they were due to play Derry this Friday, and it was obviously called off due to international call-up. So he's been given now 12 days to work with the team before they play Shelburne on Friday week. So I think that's nearly ideal for him now to, you know, just kind of get back to basics with them and hopefully get the confidence up, because that has been one of the major issues for Dundalk in recent times, that sort of bit of confidence and camaraderie's kind of gone a little, and you know, they're maybe not feared the way they used to be. So if they can get that going, maybe, you know, hopefully get a win against Shelburne and take that into the European tie. If you win that as well, all of a sudden, you know, maybe the wind changes all of a sudden, and you're flying again.
Yeah, we were just speaking off air, I suppose, about there seems to have been a bit of an attitude shift from Dundalk supporters in recent days. They obviously were very, very angry about the way Vinnie Perth's departure was handled, and the goings on at the club were coming out in public, and it wasn't good for anyone involved in the club, and they were very angry about that, and they were venting their frustrations online, and I know a lot of them cancelled their Patreon accounts with the club as well as a show of their frustration. Obviously, they don't have that opportunity to go to the ground and go to the games to voice their frustration the way they probably normally would, but that's passed now slightly. Obviously, there is still a lot of concern about maybe how the club is being run, but there's very much a lot of support for Filippo and his new management team, that the supporters are going to get behind their new man.
Yeah, I think, like, listen, he's made a good first impression. Obviously, the results need to back that up, but I mean, he's said everything right. I think the players have, you know, so far enjoyed working under him. You know, as much as you don't want to kick a man when he's down, but I think, you know, for all Vinnie did with the club, I think that he had lost a bit of support in the dressing room. You know, there's a variety of factors for that. So I think maybe the fresh start was sort of needed. They have that now. I suppose everyone's sort of playing for the future, because no one really knows what, you know, what 2021 brings, because there's so many out of contract there that, you know, Filippo said he'd like to remain on next year. Whether he does or not, I suppose that, you know, the results will determine that. But the players all have to, you know, get their shoulders to the wheel. I think that they've sort of suffered themselves. Like, you know, personally, I've been covering this Dundalk side pretty much since Stephen Kenny came in, and there's been basically no reason to criticise them to any great degree, because it's been such a whirlwind of success. And, you know, as I alluded last week, even the Dundalk's disappointments in recent years, you know, most clubs would be delighted with them, you know, losing the likes of cup finals. And, you know, even when they've went out in Europe, the very fact they're competing at a high level in Europe, clubs would be, you know, only delighted to be there. So, you know, it's been something new for them. And I think, you know, if they have professional pride, which I think they do, you know, they'll want to turn this around as much as anyone. So, I mean, that's the challenge now. Obviously, there is the thing, as they say, in the background, you know, there is a lot of concern about, you know, how the club has been run behind the scenes, and that continues. But, you know, I think just getting back to playing matches, I think it will help. And, you know, fans obviously feel a bit more disconnected than they normally would, on account of, like, they can't obviously go to games on a Friday, and normally we're talking about European draws, normally be, you know, on Skyscanner or one of these booking flights or pricing flights at this time of the year. That is disappointing, but I think if the results pick up, it will go a long way to, I suppose, easing some of the concerns about the team first and foremost, which is probably most important.
I'm not sure if you've spoken to Vinnie Perth since he's departed the club, but obviously, as you mentioned there, he was penalty kicks away from winning a domestic treble last year in what was his first full season as a manager. I mean, that looks incredible on any CV. Pile that in with all the success he had as an assistant and the great career he had as a player as well. What do you think is next for Vinnie? Because he's been at the top club in Ireland. It's very hard for him to go up a level, I suppose, if he's going to remain in Ireland. I don't know whether he has ambitions to maybe look towards the UK, whether his profile would fit any clubs in the UK or Scotland or beyond. But I suppose his next decision's got to be the right one for him, because you don't want to pick the wrong job and maybe ruin the good work he's done in terms of building his profile so far.
Yeah, I think, like, one of the problems Vinnie always had, he was always probably going to be compared to Stephen Kenny, because he came from that sort of same environment. He was obviously his assistant for so long, and one of maybe the issues he had was, you know, he had went from the guy who could, you know, put his arm around a player and say, look, I'd have picked you, to, you know, someone who was now picking the team. So he kind of went from good cop to bad cop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's hard for anyone to do, I think. I think, you know, there's no doubt he has a lot of great qualities. He was so good for Dundalk, and I don't think that should be forgotten about, you know, both as assistant and as manager. And no one can ever take those things away from him. I think, you know, no one would ever doubt his passion for the league. His, you know, his work ethic is second to none. I think, you know, I know for a fact he put in countless hours, many of it away from, you know, what fans would see. And, you know, he made a real effort to connect with the community as well. So I think another club would be lucky to have him. Did he make mistakes? I think he'd admit that himself. You know, maybe, you know, he would have done a few things differently. But I think if he can do what Stephen Kenny did, you know, you remember, it's only maybe 6-8 years ago that Stephen Kenny was let go by Shamrock Rovers. Mm. And, you know, kind of around the anniversary of that now, he's going to be taking charge of the Irish senior team. So, like, I think what Stephen did was sort of reflect on the Rovers thing, learn from his mistakes, and grew as a person and a manager from that. And I think if Vinnie can do that, there's definitely a lot of clubs would be lucky to have him. And, you know, I think even the likes of, you're obviously with a Longford hat on, you know, he gave so much to Longford over the years. And as much as there's a man in that position, someone like Longford, I think, would be an ideal job for him, you know, because he could build that sort of camaraderie there and maybe, you know, give a job like that a go.
James, it's actually very funny you should say that, because up until last night, obviously Longford had a big win last night against Wexford, and that's put them back into the title picture. But Longford, a little bit like Dundalk, were really struggling after the restart. Their performances were very flat, results weren't going their way. And after the game in Cove particularly, which was a very poor performance, if you were looking online on any of the Longford Facebook or Twitter pages, there was a lot of anger, and people were commenting, get Vinnie Perth in. Now, I think that's very unfair on the current manager, and I'm certainly not advocating that for a second, but I just wonder, would he be open to dropping into the first division or going down to what is a lower level than he's been operating at, if that means rebuilding his career?
Well, look, we've seen John Coffey go to Galway again, a club with a lot of potential that, you know, hadn't been fulfilling it. So, you know, John was the last manager, apart from Vinny and Stephen Kenny, obviously, to win a league. So, you know, there is there. And I think he does have that emotional connection with Longford as well, where, you know, he played there and would still know so many people involved in the background. You know, listen, a job is a job, but if you've some sort of passion for a club, which he obviously has for Longford, he always spoke very highly to me and any others, I think, that mentioned his time at Longford. I don't want to be pitching for a job here that, you know, that isn't available, but, you know, I think that would obviously that will always be a club sort of maybe close to his heart for obvious reasons. And, you know, I think anyone would love to work somewhere that, you know, they had a passion for. That doesn't mean he won't turn up at some club he's no connection with. But I do think, getting back to your original question, I do think there is prospects there for Vinny, and, you know, at the right club, he could definitely, you know, show that, you know, he's far from a Spence force.
Yeah, and just final couple of questions before we let you go. What do you feel like the feeling is among the fan base at the moment? As we touched on already, they can't go to the ground, so it's kind of hard to gauge the opinion. But in terms of the ownership model at the moment, we've kind of touched on that there's a lot of concern at the moment. Where do you see that heading over the next, I suppose, towards the end of this season and maybe into next year? Do you think that the supporters are going to be demanding answers if things don't go right? Or even if things do go right with the new management team, do you still think that they might be looking for answers on all that's come out in the media, both your own articles and Daniel McDonald's in particular? There was a lot of really interesting points raised in those pieces.
Yeah, well, I think the fans they do want answers. It's as much as, listen, it should be put on record, Peak Six have done a lot of good for Dundalk as well. I mean, you know, they paid both staff and players all through lockdown. You know, they did invest in the likes of the training centre, and that should never be taken away. But I think it is concerning. Obviously, Martin Connolly has now stepped out from the board and as a position of secretary of the company that would oversee Dundalk FC, and as a result, there's no local presence now on the board. From what I gather, there's no statement on the way in terms of, you know, about the runnings of the club to either deny or, you know, accept responsibility for some of the things that have been reported on. And that silence, I don't think, will help matters. I think it would be helpful, be it through, you know, a podcast such as your own, through a journalist, through, you know, even if it's the club website, to come out with some sort of statement. As you say, Alan Reynolds has departed, John Gill has departed. Obviously, John put out his own Twitter page, and that's the only reason we officially, I suppose, know that John Gill's gone. But, like, you know, even clarifying things like that would be a start. I do feel sorry for the people who work there. I know you mentioned people cancelling the likes of the Patreon scheme. There's a lot of good people who work at Dundalk FC, and local people, and just the Patreon in particular, like, was, you know, it's basically Gavin McLaughlin's brainchild, and Gavin, as we know, had covered Dundalk for a long time, both through the Dundalk Democrat, through Dundalk Sport, and he obviously written a few books in the club. So there's probably no one who's given, you know, fans more insight to what's going on in Oriel over recent years than Gavin. And, you know, he would love to be able to report on more about the goings on now, but, you know, obviously his hands are tied in terms of he's an employee of the club, and he can only maybe put out statements that are approved from America. And I feel sorry for people like him that, you know, are kind of caught in this crossfire. You know, as much as the fans are frustrated, I think, you know, how did the staff feel? You know, they're not getting answers either. So there's a lot of uncertainty there, and I think coming out and speaking about it would do a lot to, you know, arrest those fears, I suppose. But again, from what I gather, I wouldn't expect anything anytime soon.
Yeah, do you feel there's a bit of a disconnect forming between the club and the community? That's something we kind of touched on in the past, and the patron scheme was very much viewed as a positive in terms of giving supporters more access to video and content with players, and it was very much viewed as something positive. And even the appointment of Gavin into that role, it was great to see a local man who was so heavily involved in recent years getting that position. But as you said, there's a risk now that a lot of that good work could be shattered.
Yeah, and to be fair, like I COVID just doesn't help these things. I know part of the plans for the Patriots game was to have, you know, different nights with, you know, be it legends, be it with current players, be it Q&A, quiz nights, whatever it was. And obviously they're not just, you know, you can't really do them at the minute, obviously, because of social distancing, etc. So that doesn't help in that regard. But yeah, like, I mean, from the owner's point of view, if they want backing for, you know, different projects going forward, and, you know, only they know sort of what their plans are, you know, not, you know, falling out with the local community, because, you know, that includes the business community. It's not the way to go about it. Like, already, you know, Fife have confirmed that they have ended their sponsorship of the club. I know there is other sponsors lined up and supposedly on a more lucrative deal, but, like, I think everyone would appreciate how good a sponsor Fife were. They give a lot back, you know, to Durant's, you know, sponsored the summer camps. They've done incredible promotional videos over the years and things like that. And, you know, it's sad that that link is gone now. And that's why, I suppose, people kind of fear, as much as anything else, you know, is this the end of an era when, you know, Stephen Kenny's gone, now Vinnie Peart's gone, even your sponsor's gone, and a few players that, I suppose, were critical to that sort of success over the years on the field, they're sort of coming, you know, there, a lot of them are out of contract. I wouldn't write any of them off and say they're finished just yet, but, you know, it does have that sort of what now look about it. And even confirming whether, you know, they want to be here next year, Pete Six, you know, that's always a question mark over them. And just, you know, coming out and saying, you know, we still view this as a viable project or not, I think that would do a lot to, you know, allay some of the fears that are out there at the moment.
Yeah, and again, just final question. You mentioned Martin Connolly's resignation from the board. Obviously, that's another local connection gone. And I think it might have been one of your tweets you had up where you mentioned there's no EU-based member on that board. Now, I wouldn't have the foggiest about kind of company law or anything, but does that leave the club in a sticky situation? Is that something they're going to have to move on quickly to address?
Well, like all these things, I'd imagine they have a period to maybe to address it, and I don't think it'll be the biggest issue to overcome. They will have to obviously appoint someone, but I'm sure it's largely maybe a token role, and, you know, you sign a few documents at the end of the year, and throughout the year, obviously, you don't have to be necessarily in every board meeting. I'd imagine they will appoint someone. They have obviously people close to them here as well, and I'm sure someone will step up to the role. But it is sad when you lose. Obviously, Martin is still working at the club. That shouldn't be forgotten. But he's still the COO. But it's sad when you lose local people who've been so involved. Like Colin Murphy was secretary for long and many a time, through good times and bad for the club. But he's kind of stepped away a certain amount. Simon Blackmore was heavily involved with the club licensing as well. And, you know, another great volunteer. And when you're losing people of this calibre and experience, and ultimately with a love for the club, like, I mean, no one's saying everyone gets every decision right, but you never doubt that, you know, decisions these people made were in the best interest of the football club and the community in general. So when you're losing them, I suppose that just adds to the concern.
Yeah, I suppose another question people have had as well, the new management team to come in, neither of them hold a pro license as far as I'm aware. I noticed that Shane Keegan was on the bench in Cove, and that's something that a role he wouldn't have been filling previously under the previous management team. So is he kind of stepping in there with that regulation in mind?
Well, it's one of those things that's up in the air at the moment. You do get a 60-day dispensation, I think, which will take Filippo and Giuseppe till the end of the season, although the win in Cove does mean that, I suppose, they're now going to go into November, because that's when the cup resumes now. So that's when the issue will arise. Shane has been, I suppose, traditionally he was the opposition analyst for Vinnie Peart, so he maybe wouldn't have been at a lot of Dundalk games. He's probably been at more Dundalk games more recently, just because with, you know, social distancing and small numbers in grounds, he's not able to go to as many away venues and spy on opposition as he maybe would have used to do. He was on bench, obviously, in Cove. I know he, as of Sunday, I don't think he had spoken to the owners in regards to what his ongoing role is. He's obviously still officially employed as the opposition analyst, and if he's become more of a, you know, hands-on coach, I mean, that's all to be determined as yet. But yeah, the club have been very, very silent on what is happening in that regard. And again, that has to all been signed off in America. You know, so, you know, any fans frustrated with that, please don't take it out on the local staff in Oriel Park.
Yeah, it just seems to be a real lack of transparency at Dundalk at the moment. James, thanks very much for joining us. Great insight as always. No and thanks for speaking to us. For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. As ever, thanks to James Rogers for coming on and clearing up some of that. Don't want to spend too much longer on Dundalk, David. Obviously, we've touched on it plenty there with James. But just from a fan's view, while I have you here, I might as well ask for the fan's perspective.
Don't go there.
As I said with James, you know, obviously the fans seem to have had their couple of days to vent the frustrations online and they're fully behind the manager now. But from an ownership point of view, have you got a lot of questions you'd like to see answered there?
Absolutely. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, it's horrendous how things have really capitulated over the last month or so. But, you know, the silence is deafening at times and it is worrying. But James alluded to it somewhat there. You know, Peak Six have brought a lot of good to Dundalk Football Club. And I don't necessarily believe that getting rid of Peak Six necessarily is what is needed.
Because there is a lot of fans calling for that at the moment.
Yeah, and look, that's everyone's entitled to opinion. I'm just of the belief that, you know, maybe it's the change of chairman is needed as opposed to a change of ownership, because ultimately Dundalk Football Club is not a toy, and you run the risk of it being seen as one now by a gentleman who is, without, I don't mean to be ageist, but you know, he's getting on in years, and I don't like the idea of the club being some sort of pastime.
I think you've summed it up perfectly there. So that's where we might leave it and move on to speak about the other cup results over the last couple of days. Shamrock Rovers 2, Cork 1. Good performance from Cork after, you know, a rocky spell for them in the league. They'll be quite pleased with their performance. But again, ultimately, it's another defeat for Niamh Fenn and his team. Shamrock Rovers opted to make a number of rotations, as expected, after their mammoth penalty shootout in Europe on Thursday week. But again, it just shows the strength and depth for Shamrock Rovers, doesn't it? They can bring a couple of players in, like Lafferty. He's got a double, and Rovers through to the next round of the Cup.
Absolutely. I mean, Shamrock Rovers this season have been phenomenal, albeit with the gap for COVID in between. I know that their last two league games mightn't have necessarily brought around the result that they were necessarily looking for. But, I mean, in terms of squad and everything that they've got there, I mean, they're a well-oiled machine. Niamh Fenn's Cork, I mean, they are really struggling in the league, and, you know, a little bit of a cup run wouldn't have done them any harm. I mean,
well, we've seen the bounce they got from their win over Longford, you know, which is something strange to say because they're a Premier Division club and a club with such huge stature and history. But their win over a First Division team gave them a huge confidence boost, and they went then and carried that into the next league game when they beat Sligo very, very comfortably. So if they had got any sort of result here against, at the moment, what is the best team in the country, it would have been an even bigger boost for them. But that cup run has ended. As I said, ultimately, it's another defeat for a team very low on confidence.
Yeah, and look, you know, it's something, football is based on confidence, and you know, it's just a cruel game at times, and Cork are paying the price at the moment. But look, I think most people would have easily turned around and said that Shamrock Rovers probably were going to see that one out, and they ultimately did.
Another result that I suppose most people would have expected, Bowes 2, Cabin Teely 0. Cabin Teely flying high in the First Division at the moment. But this was a Bowes team who, despite their exit in Europe last week, that was a really good performance to go over to Hungary, put it up to a team that was much better resourced than them financially, full of international players, that team. And they go out on penalties and then very, very cruel on Bowes. But it just shows what a good team Keith Long has put together, and a 2-0 win here to go through to the next round of the Cup.
Yeah, and I mean, look, let's not take anything for granted. Cab and Tealy are a really good side, yeah. and Bowes, you know, they were very, very unlucky in Europe, and it could have really derailed, but it really hasn't. In fact, going on the performance, you would nearly say that it made them that little bit stronger, a bit more of a unit, and for them to put in the performance they put in last night, I mean, they were full value for the win.
Yeah, and one thing with Bowes down recent years, when we looked at them, we always said they're relying heavily on Dinny Corcoran for the goals, and if he gets injured, be worried. But they don't have that this year, because Andre Wright has been an absolute star for them, and he was rested last night. Corcoran came in and got a goal. So they've got that option there if needs be. If Andrew Wright gets injured or loses a little bit of form, they've got a man full of experience who can score goals. He doesn't even need half a chance, he'll put it in the back of the net, and they've got that option there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's good management. I mean, that's identifying a weakness and improving on it,
yeah,
for the following year. And I mean, that's ultimately why they are where they are in the league at the moment. And I'm really looking forward to Saturday.
Yeah, we'll be speaking about the big Dublin derby a little bit later on. Just on Bowes, Keith Long, he's a man we're always praising on this show, myself and John. Is he someone you would have liked to have seen maybe Dundalk identify as their next manager?
I don't know, was the short answer. I mean, look, the management situation at Oriel, I wasn't overly thrilled with bringing in Filippo. I mean, he has my full support. But I think overall, if you're really going to show ambition to try and kick on to a new level, Peak Six really should have looked to England and brought in somebody of a much, much higher profile.
Would you have been happy with Robbie Keane?
No, definitely not. I'd been happier with Roy Keane, to be truthful. But look, you know, the way things are at the moment, you just have to get through this season and just see how it pans out. But Keith Long, I mean, look, he's a fantastic manager. Him and Trevor Crowley have built a really,
yeah,
really strong side there, and it'd be a shame to see them break it up. You know?
And you worry about that from a playing point of view as well, the players they've got there. Even Anto Breslin that's gone there from Longford, he's already catching the eye. He's been a player that's been in England. You just wonder how much longer it is before an English club look at him and try and bring him back. And they've got other players there, Danny Mandrew, of course, as well. Danny Grant has been sensational this season. I've touched on Andre Wright as well, another player that's come from the UK. So hopefully from a Bowes point of view, they can get a trophy this season. I'd really love to see them win something.
Now they have a bit of financial clout with the deal from Doherty, the Wolves to Spurs transfer going through. I mean, that's massive to them.
Somehow I don't think they'll be just throwing that into to play in.
I would agree. But I mean, you know, if they can allocate some of it yeah, towards the playing budget, then it'll really stand them in good stead.
Yeah, and the prize money for getting into the quarterfinals of the FAI Cup has improved substantially. I think it's 25,000 per club, so they've had a really good week, Bowes, with that Doherty money progression in the FAI Cup, and obviously a bit of European money coming in this year as well. It's been a really good week for Bowes. Let's move on to just speak very briefly on the game of the First Division last night. That was Longford Town 3, Wexford 1. I was commentating on this one for LTFC Plus, the live stream, and I'll actually bring you an audio clip in a moment of that amazing moment when young Aaron McCabe came off the bench to score from 30 or 40 yards, chipping the goalkeeper. He went on to get another goal then a couple of minutes later. But first half was a really good performance from Longford. They changed the shape, changed the system. They played with three at the back and it worked perfectly, created chances. Should have been more than one up at the break, but they only went in 1-0 up thanks to a great save from Murphy for Wexford just before the halftime whistle. Then second half, Longford didn't come out of the dressing room. They were really poor. Wexford got a deserved equaliser and it looked like Longford were going to leave 3 points behind them until McCabe came off the bench and got the goal. But from just David, yourself, obviously you're a Premier Division fan, I don't know how much First Division you see, but from just an outsider's point of view looking in, it's a bit of a bonkers league this year, the First Division, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, both leagues are a bit bonkers this year with everything that's going on, but look, that was a big win for Longford, and I mean, ultimately they have major ambitions to at least get into the playoffs, if not get promoted outright, and they really needed that win. after looking back at that goal, it was a hell of a finish. And you'd be delighted to hear that your commentary probably made it that little bit better.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. But I think that's where I don't want to go on too much about Longford. Obviously, we'll be discussing the fixtures in the First Division at the weekend. They have a game against Rovers 2 in Talla, which could be interesting for a number of reasons, and I'll touch on that later on. But what we'll do now, I'm going to bring you the audio of that amazing goal. If you haven't seen it yet, head over to the Longford Town Twitter page and you'll see it. It's approaching on 30,000 views already. I see it's been shared by the likes of balls.ie, the 42, and a load of other high profile pages. And you'll hear post-match interviews then from the young man that scored that phenomenal goal, Aaron McCabe, and from the Longford manager, Darragh Doyle.
Great tactical change from Wexford. They've just approached the second half like they did the first, and Longford have just totally dropped off the tempo and dropped down the gear in the second half. But this could be a chance for young McCabe. Keeper's off his line.
Oh, and McCabe has scored! What a goal from the youngster. 2-1 to Longford with about 4 minutes to play, and the whole team celebrating together. Lee Stacey's round the length of the pitch to get involved. What a goal from the youngster.
And remember, he got the winning goal away to Galway as well.
I'm here with the match winner, Aaron McCabe. Aaron, talk us through that goal, that first goal. You've lobbed a keeper from 30 or 40 yards out. Was that the first thought in your mind?
It was, yeah, because even coming off the bench, before I even came on, I could see that the keeper was, he was always eager to come off his line. Mm. So I knew that coming into the game, and I knew that I could see that Rob was winning his headers. It was all going well for him. So I gambled when Joe Gorman hit the ball up, and I could see Rob jumping up to it, so I gambled, and thankfully he was still off his line. And I'm not usually a man to score from outside the box, it's usually in the box, but thank God on this time.
Yeah, and that's what you did with your second goal. You're in the right place at the right time. You're getting a bit of a reputation as a poacher now.
I think even when I was underage, I was always a bit of a poacher, you know. That's how I usually played. But obviously, coming into Eritrea leagues under 17s, under 19s, you have to adapt, you know. I've played a few positions for Dara here between pre-season and in the league, you know. So I've always...
Yeah, what would you say your best position is? Is it a striker? Because I suppose a lot of the fans might know your background in underage football. What is your position?
Well, I would have always played striker.
Right.
Would have just always been that poacher who was offside 15 times a game and who always got on maybe one or two lucky balls and stuck them in. So, yeah, that's what I usually play, but... You know, over the past few seasons, I've adapted my game. I've been used as nearly a hold-up striker, even though I'm not the biggest, but it's what you have to do in this league, yeah. In these leagues.
Because I was just speaking to Dara there, and we mentioned you came off the bench against Cork in the Cup, and you got into two or three really good positions, and on that night, maybe the composure and the occasion just slightly got the better of you. But then you played against Galway, and people will look back at that goal, they'll think it was a really simple finish, but you've actually sliced the ball into the bottom corner, a really clever and composed finish, and then you've scored two phenomenal goals tonight. So you obviously do have ice in your veins in front of goal.
I don't know. Well, I would have always told people about that Galway goal that I meant it, but no, I didn't. I sliced that. But yeah, as you know, anyone would say, as the more appearances you get, the more composure you'll get on the ball, the more composure you'll get striking. And with goals comes obviously more composure, and more composure comes more goals.
Yeah, and it must help. I just noticed during the game you played a ball into the corner and it didn't work out for you, but it was a clever ball because you were getting the ball away from the danger, but it was still an opportunity you had to stay in, that Elworthy might have got in, and straight away Dervin was around to say great decision. There's obviously a real team spirit here and camaraderie and helping the young players through games.
100%, yeah. There's about 6 or 7 under 19s in, and yeah, we've all been brought in. Everyone's treating us well, but no differently, because you know at this level you have to adapt quickly, or you know you can't play. And yeah, even out there, everyone knows he'll always be on your case, and but that's the way he plays, and that's why he's one of the better midfielders in the league. So you have to, and with the game management there, it's something you know we might have struggled with, or we nearly haven't had the chance to do it, to see a game out. But yeah, it's all about game management. You can see that with a lot of clubs in this league, that's what they try to do. Yeah. And even though we always try to play nice football, sometimes you just have to see the game out. You might have to play dirty football.
Yeah, and you haven't played dirty football tonight, but at times in that second half, it didn't look like you were going to get the 3 points, but you found a way to win, and you're heading up to Tala now, another big game. Just speaking to Dara there, it's all about building momentum going into them big games against the likes of Drogheda, UCD, who are looking like genuine title contenders, and you're hoping to be among that bunch of contenders.
100%. We said at the start of the season, we're saying it now, we want to be up there. We want to be in contention with the league. Not just playoffs, but the league. But yeah, it's all about momentum in this league. You know, it's very easy. Anyone can lose to anyone, and that's it. So we got to build on against Shamrock Rovers and Tala. If they play nice football, it's something that probably differs them from the rest, maybe with us as well. So yeah, we don't really have to change the way we play, but you know, every game is different, and hopefully we can get the 3 points up there.
Yeah, finally a nice venue to go and play football in. And obviously it's a great surface here at Bishopgate, but Tala, it's a big stadium to go and play, and obviously there'll be no fans, but AC Milan will be playing there in a couple of weeks, and now you're going to be playing on the same pitch, so it must be exciting for a young player like yourself.
Ah, yeah, hopefully I'll get the same seat as Zlatan, maybe, but get a bit of his powers. But it's a lovely venue to go up to, you know, one of the best stadiums in the country, and it'll be nice venue. Unfortunately, no fans, but you know, we gotta work through it.
Aaron, brilliant stuff. Thanks very much.
Download the free Barwon Racing app from the Google Play Store and Apple Market right now and enjoy the latest sporting odds and offers at your fingertips, as well as features such as live in-play betting and much more. BarwonRacing.com, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
I'm here at Bishop's Gate with Dara Doyle. A 3-1 win for Longford against Wexford. Dara, what a crazy last few minutes.
Yeah, no, listen, it was. Aaron McCabe's come on there and he scored two outstanding goals, particularly the first one. It's a brilliant finish, and I think it's his first touch when he comes on, basically. And to take the goal so early and execute the finish the way he did, it was an outstanding goal. And you see the second goal again, he's one of those type of fox-in-the-box type players that he's always following things in.
I actually likened them to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on commentary there. But
right?
It was funny because we were just mentioning it on commentary. He came on against Cork in the Cup and he got into two or three really good positions. And on the night, you could see he was probably a little bit inexperienced, a little bit not composed in front of goal, and he fluffed his lines. But he got that winner against Galway. He showed loads of composure that night. And as you said, the finish, he didn't even... My first thought was take the ball down and run at the goalkeeper and get a shot away. But he knew what he was going to do straight away. He wanted a shot. Lobbed it over the goalkeeper. Unbelievable goal from a young player.
Yeah, no, it's great, and we have seen the quality he has in training since he came into the first team last season. So it doesn't really surprise me to see him finish like that. You mentioned the movement he has. His movement is excellent, and that is something that we thought with putting him on up there with Rob that he might be able to get down the sides. And luckily, Rob done really well to get a flick on. He's read the play and gone on and finished it great. So not the two of them combined really well, and happy for Rob to get three assists, and I'm sure the goals will come for him very soon as well. I think there was an improvement in his game again tonight. I thought he was very good in the first half in particular.
Let's go back to the first half, because I spoke to you after the game in Cove, and you said yourself the performance that night it wasn't good enough, and some of the performances post-lockdown haven't been up to scratch. And You shook it up tonight before the game. You made a tactical change. You were three at the back, two wing backs, and it was a really impressive first half performance. There was a lot of interplay in the midfield. You seemed to have players joint. There was options all over the pitch for Longford. What do you put that down to? Was it the change in system? Obviously, Dean Byrne had an impact. He was very, very good in the first half as well.
Yeah, listen, you mentioned that, and the two previous performances weren't at the levels that we expect from ourselves of a group. Listen, we all had to take responsibility for that. Everybody in the group. What we did have after the last game was 8 days with training, so where we got four really good sessions in, and you mentioned the tweak to the system, which we did do, and we worked really hard on exactly where we want and need players in possession and out possession. So it was one of those that we felt if we played it and played it the way we wanted to, that it would give us all them options to play through the opposition and get players closer to Rob to make his life easier when we're in the final third. And there was times that was really good. I think there was one stage in the first half where we had probably four or five attacking, and Shane Elwood, he gets a ball in from the right side, and I think Adam Evans comes in on the left side with a volley that the keeper makes a good save.
Yeah, that was just before the break as well, 2-0. You're probably saying it's game over at that stage. In saying that, you're disappointed your team didn't add to their lead in that first half, given how dominant they were.
Yeah, no, we would have been, definitely. And we went into them at half time and we said that we needed to kick on. It was important that we tried to get the next goal. And it did look like that, possibly in the first 15, 20 minutes. They still didn't really come to terms, I think, with our shape. But then they did have a spell of 10 minutes where they were in the game and we had to defend them. Possibly could have made one or two better decisions defensively to go and, you know, take authority there at the back and lead. And they did get one or two things that dropped and bounced. I think Lee makes one good save at his near post. They possibly had one or two other balls go across the box. So they got themselves back into the game with a free kick. Led to believe it took a little deflection and went in at the back post. But we've had to make one or two changes, and with Matthew and young Aaron coming on and making the impact that Aaron had, he's won us the game with his two goals, and I can't say.
Were you disappointed with the second half performance though before the substitutes came on? Because as we said, Longford were very, very dominant in that first half. Wexford now did have a big threat on the counter-attack, particularly with Jack Doherty and Smith. But your team seemed to just not be in the same gear they were in the first half and maybe brought some trouble on themselves. And as you said, they got a slice of luck with that equaliser, a bit of a deflection. But did your team maybe bring that on themselves slightly?
I think we did with our decision making. That I think it could have been better from players in areas that needed to affect the game. And at times we didn't defend well enough and we did allow them to create chances. So listen, it's something that we look at again. And like I say, it was a slightly different system, so we'll continue to work at it in the week and we'll see where that takes us now coming into the game against Rovers on Friday. It's another big game for us.
I know you won't give your game plan away, but do you feel that's your best system going forward, or is it horses for courses and you'll pick a certain system for certain games and certain teams?
Yeah, listen, we've a lot of players there. I think you look that we've used a lot of players. We're coming back with the amount of games that we've played, we've had to. So, we look at it and we'll assess it. Obviously, we play a Shamrock Rovers team who play a slightly different formation than the Wexford team tonight. Mm. So we look at that and tonight, tomorrow we'll talk and we'll see where that brings us for Friday. But we're aware of how big the game, and should we get the result that we want, we'll see how closer that would bring us to the top end of the table. And that's what the really important thing is now with 9 games to go. There's no easy games. Mm. We're going into a run where we play Drogheda and UCD, Bray in quick enough succession. So we do need to be at it, and we need to have a strong finish to get where we want to.
Final question, 69 minutes under the belt for Dean Byrne tonight. Really impressive at times in the first half. There was one moment where he pulled the ball down. He went through the middle of two Wexford defenders and he's curled a shot just over the bar. It would have been phenomenal if it went in, but you must be delighted to have him back and that spark in the team, and to see him come off the pitch and look so fit and healthy on the pitch and so lively for a player that hasn't played it in 6 months. He looked like he'd never been away.
Yeah, no, you're right. Listen, but Dean has worked really hard with his rehab. We've got to thank Albert and Willie and all the people that have been there to help him in his recovery. So he's come back in and we're delighted to have him. You could see his quality there in the first half. I thought he'd done a lot of really, really good things, and having a player like Dean Byrne back, it gives everybody in the group, the supporters, everyone in the club a lift having a player of his calibre back in. And we're sure we'll expect some special things from Dean Byrne in the coming games, because he's a player that's more than capable of producing.
Barry, thanks very much.
David, you've been waiting to discuss this one for a while. It's Rovers Bowes Dublin Derby, potential title decider. What's your thoughts?
It's going to be a great game. I have absolutely no doubt about it. The Dublin Derby always is. And I fancy Bowes to put in a really strong performance, certainly based on their previous performances over the last number of weeks. Rovers, they're a really good outfit, as I've said prior. It's going to be a real tussle. If you're asking me to call it, I do feel it will be a draw, but I do feel it'll be a score draw. Because I think that Bowes certainly have the firepower this season to show a little bit of a chink in Rovers' armour. But I do feel that Rovers have the firepower up front at the other end to do damage. So I can see that one being a draw.
Look, I know you listened to the show most weeks. You would have heard me. I've called Bowes as my title favourites. Maybe not so much favourites, but I've said that I really fancy Bowes to win it this year, just with the shortened season. I think everything's fallen into place for them. They're playing really well. As we touched on, it's been a good week even for them off the field financially and everything. Everything just coming up green at the moment for Bowes. Shamrock Rovers performances have been a little bit lacklustre in recent weeks. Obviously they showed great steel and character, and that's probably something maybe we were questioning in recent years when they went into these big games against Bowes and Dundalk. They were the games they were slipping up on, and they showed a lack of character, maybe a lack of bottle, but this year they've shown they have that. They beat Dundalk in Tallaght. They came through that mammoth penalty shootout. That showed a great deal of steel and character. So they'll be well up for this one, Rovers, but I think Bowes certainly have enough to at least come away with a point. But I think if they're going to win the title, they probably have to go and win this game. So on that basis alone, I'm going to side with a Bowes win.
Okay.
Let's move on to the next one. Waterford against Pass. This could be a big game in the battle for potentially Europe. Do you see these two teams as European contenders?
Oh man, that would imply that Dundalk would fall out of the European spot.
Well, even a top four finish, you know, depending on cup results, traditionally in the last number of years, fourth place has been enough to get you into Europe. So,
yeah.
Do you feel it's a battle for a top four place? To put it that way.
Yeah, I do. I mean, look, it's one of those ties that in previous seasons, you would have written off very early on. I think Stephen O'Donnell at Pats has done a really steady job. And as you could see from the two performances since the return from the break, you know, they're really starting to click. Plus they've added Georgie Kelly to it as well. Waterford, I'm not going to lie, I don't have much time for after the Mr. Sheridan thing. So on that basis, I'm going for a Pats win.
Yeah, and they've shown a weakness late in games recently, haven't they? They conceded a lot of late goals, particularly in that stunning final 10 minutes against Finn Harps, where it looked like Harps were dead and buried, and they came back to win the game 3-2. And Waterford are playing some really nice football, and there's some players that are really catching my eye in that team. Sobowale at right full has been phenomenal since he's come into the team, and Smith and Coote look good players. And they've announced Daryl Murphy this week as well. Whether he's fit enough to play, we don't know, but I know that deal was done a number of weeks ago and it's only been announced now, so to me that would suggest that he probably is ready to come straight into the team. And I did touch on this a couple of weeks ago, that for me the only thing they were missing was a ruthless number nine, because they've got Michael O'Connor up there. He's been at a number of clubs and he's never really been prolific, and he's been in and out of the league, and look, a lot of people think he's a player with potential. I've never really seen that personally. I think if they can get a real hardened number nine like Murphy, who can turn something into nothing, or nothing into something I should say, that could be the difference between Waterford finishing in around those European spots and just as a rag team in the middle.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, there's only 3 points between eighth and third, so there's certainly a lot of scope with one particular game. Everything could swing on it. Look, you know, Murphy, that's a great signing for Waterford, and if he hits the ground in any way, shape or form, hits the ground running, I mean, that's a hell of an addition. So I would say, look, I don't know really.
Yeah, Pats are a team that blow hot and cold as well, aren't they? Both teams do, really. It's a tough one to call. Yeah, and there is a lack of consistency in the league this year.
Yeah, there is. And I think that's primarily down to the fact that the season has been broken into two halves, and the shortened season then as well, and people knowing that there's only 9 or 8 games left. And you're just at the point now where it's just like, you know, 8-9 cup finals and that's it.
I'm not going to make a call. It could go either way, that game, but it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on the result and the performances of certain players. This is a massive game, David. Shells against Cork. Shells have lost their way a little bit in recent weeks. We've touched on Cork's struggles. If Cork are going to get themselves out of a hole, they need to be winning games like this.
They do, and Shells are looking for a bit of form as well, so it's going to be one of those games where winner takes it all. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a 6-pointer. I mean, going by the league table, there's 4 points in it between Cork in 10th and Rovers in 7th. So, or not Rovers, Shelburne. In 7th. So, you know, you'd have to feel that if Cork were to have any major ambition to really kick out of that bottom two, they need to be getting a win here.
For me, this is actually a bigger game for Shells than Cork, and that sounds silly given Cork's predicament at the moment, but you look at Shells, they're on 11 points, Sligo in 4th are on 12, so a win automatically just fires Shells into a position where they can start thinking about European football next season. Now, I think Shells and Ian Morris would be perfectly happy with a mid-table finish first season back in the Premier, re-establish yourselves and then build on that for next year. But if they lose this game, you're looking down the table then. You're talking about Shells maybe being a contender for that relegation playoff spot. They don't want that. They want to be, at the very least, a safe mid-table team, if not higher. So for me, this is a huge game for Shells and their ambitions for the season.
Yeah, and I mean, look, if you're looking at stats and form, then you'd have to say that Shells and Cork are very similar in a sense that there's only one goal of a difference in terms of goals scored. Shells have scored 6 and Cork have only scored 5 over the 9 games. So that is a bit of a worry. But Cork on the other side then have conceded 15 and as opposed to Shelburne's 8. So I'd fancy Shells to certainly keep a clean sheet.
And Shells did win this one 1-0. I think it was the opening weekend of the season or early on the season. So that's what you've just said. Shells are very much a team. If they are going to win games, they're going to be 1-0 games. They did it up in Ballybuffet as well with 10 men recently. And that, if I was going to have a bet on this game, that is actually the result I'd go for. I think Shells will win it 1-0.
Okay, well, I mean, who might argue with that one?
Let's move on to another big game down at the bottom. Sligo against Harps. Sligo, it looked like they had ambitions of getting up the table. Then they hit that little rough spot when they lost to Cork, but they've recovered well again from that. They're sitting up there in fourth position, so they could actually overtake Dundalk in third with a win here. Where do you see Sligo's ambitions at the moment? Is it just take it one game at a time?
Yes, very much so. I do feel that it's take it very much one game at a time, but I do think that the players that they've signed, and Liam Buckley has them playing some really lovely stuff. They put in a great performance against Dundalk and deserved the 3 points. You know, they're certainly a much better side than what their previous league positions over the last number of years have reflected. And I think, you know, they'll be there or thereabouts for Europe this year, I feel.
Right, you don't feel they'll be in any relegation trouble at all?
No, I think there's too many teams below them that will struggle more so. As we've alluded to Cork and Harps primarily. But as I say, if the likes of Shells and St Pat's, who aren't scoring a whole lot of goals, they could be dragged into it an awful lot quicker than I feel Sligo will.
Yeah, this is probably a bigger game again for Finn Harps than it is for Sligo, because you're looking at Harps down there. They're in the relegation playoff position. They're on 7 points, the same as Cork. They're just one goal ahead of Cork in terms of goals scored. But Waterford, who are in eighth, are on 11 points. So if Waterford were to get a win this weekend and Harps were to lose, there's already a bit of a gap appearing there. Now, I think probably Ollie Horgan might have accepted a playoff at the start of the season. But after the good start Harps had, it would be disappointing to see them get cut adrift from the rest.
Yeah, and look, if Finn Harps could get the win here, I mean, that would be colossal to them. Not only would it have a demoralising effect on Cork,
yeah,
but it would also put the heat on to Waterford and Shells and everyone just above the drop zone. So I mean, look, the you could argue that the drop zone goes the whole way up to third, where Dundalk is, because ultimately there's only 7 points of a difference.
Yeah, it really is crazy,
and it's just a mad season.
Yeah, you just get a feeling this is going to be a pivotal weekend, though. There seems to be a lot of games here with a lot of weight on them. Obviously, Derry against Dundalk is postponed due to international call-ups. So before we move on to speak about the first division fixtures this weekend, I'm going to bring in Dean Arrowsmith now. He's calling in from the States, and he's involved with a very, very important project at the moment to try and promote more mental health awareness within the League of Ireland in particular. So here's Dean on the line now. Dean Arrowsmith joins me on Between the Stripes LOI podcast now, all the way from the States. Dean, how are you keeping?
I'm good, Kieran. How are you doing?
Not too bad. So tell us a little bit, I suppose, about yourself. I know you're a well-known man in the Dundalk region, and I realise this has actually ended up being quite a Dundalk-heavy show tonight. That was unintended. But for those of us that probably don't, or those people that aren't from around Dundalk, tell us a little bit about yourself and your involvement with the League of Ireland down the years.
So people from the league or some people from the league would know me from my time as kit man with Dundalk in 2010 and 2011 when Ian Foster was the manager. I've been working for the club from 2007 right through to 2012, and I would have been very heavily involved in the Save Our Club campaign when Dundalk was struggling. And then for some reason they got a lot of success after I left at the beginning of 2013, so I don't know, maybe I was a bad omen for the club at the time. But yeah, I've been involved in the league. I've been involved in Irish football for years, and then in 2015 I made the move out to Chicago and haven't looked back since.
Yeah, and yeah, you're doing a bit of coaching out there at the moment.
I am indeed, yeah. I'm director of coaching for a youth club here just in the suburbs in Chicago.
That must mean you're in the running for a League of Ireland job down the line then, because the new Dundalk manager kind of fits a similar profile, I suppose.
Yeah, I was disappointed I didn't get the call from him, to be honest. But I'm happy with what I'm doing at the minute, and it's a good career kind of for me out here. So happy where I am for now.
Very good. And look, we've got you on the show tonight to talk to us about a new organisation, I suppose, you're involved in, called Head in the Game. If you could tell us a little bit more about that, that'd be great.
Yeah, so as you probably know, and it was highlighted at the beginning of August when Harry Taff unfortunately passed away through suicide. It was, you know, a lot of people had outpourings on social media, and rightfully so. Harry was a great man. I mean, Harry was, again, heavily involved with the Save Our Club campaign, and that's how I got to know him and his family through that. And then after he passed, myself and about four or five other Dundalk fans kind of got into a group chat together, and we said, you know, it's all well and good that we're tweeting about it and stuff, but can we do something a little bit bigger? And this is kind of where this evolved from, the Head in the Game campaign. And we said, I think in League of Ireland circles and in Ireland, especially with men and women, we tend to bottle things up and we don't get it out. And I think it's just, we're at a time and at an age where I think people need to speak out and speak up about any issues that they have, and hopefully prevent something like this happening again. And that's kind of the tack that we're taking, is that if we can help one person, then that's going to be a good job for what we're doing with the campaign.
Yeah, I know you've got some projects in the pipe work, and you don't want to give too much away just yet, but I suppose, how are you going to try and achieve your goals? Is probably the best way of phrasing the question without wanting to make you give away too much.
Yeah, so we are we're hoping, like, we've launched on social media, but we're hoping to do an official launch sometime, hopefully this month. Again, as you said there, I don't want to give away exactly what we're doing, but we have a couple of high profile names involved in that, in helping us launch the program. And then we're also talking with a couple of mental health charities for both youth and for adults. We pretty much have them confirmed, which you'll see on our social media over the next couple of weeks as well. Fingers crossed. And from that, you know, we're going to just, it's about beginning the conversation and about speaking out about your problems and things like that there. And what we can do to help each other. I mean, the League of Ireland community is there's a lot of people involved, but as you know, we're a small community, so I feel like when times are tough, we all kind of rally around together. You leave your rivalries to one side and things. As we've seen this week, that Drogheda United actually posted the Head in the Game campaign logo on their programme and had a big write-up about what we're doing. So, you know, for five Dundalk lads, it's a bit... It was a bit tough to begrudgingly thank them for that, you know, but it's great to see it, you know, and that's the kind of spirit of League of Ireland that we're trying to bring into the campaign, and just get everyone behind each other and help each other through the problems.
Yeah, and I've gotten to know quite a few of the lads involved with Drogheda. We had their chairman on recently, Connor, and he spoke really, really well, and they just seem to be doing an awful lot of stuff really right off the pitch. Obviously, you mentioned they put your logo on their program recently. They had Harry Taff on the front of the program after his sad passing as well, and they seem to be really trying to promote mental health within their own community and within the league, as you said there. So they're doing a lot of things right, and I suppose the goal for yourselves now is to try and branch that out around the entire league and get everyone involved.
It is, for sure. I've actually been in conversation with Mark Scanlon, who just took over as the director of the League of Ireland, and he's very much behind what we're doing. And once we have a more definitive plan, we can go back to them, and like they've pretty much said, they're happy to help us in any way they can. So the long-term objective is obviously to get every club in the League of Ireland, the Women's National League, involved in this, and just build it year on year. You know, we're just five lads that have kind of volunteered our time to get this off the ground. So it's, you know, we want to do, some of us, and myself included, we want to have stuff done yesterday. But we also have a couple of calm heads in the group that know that to build something like this and with the potential that it's got, you know, it's going to take time.
Yeah, because I suppose one thing people forget, I know when you look at footballers, you obviously think of all the money they get paid in the Premier League and the lifestyle they have. But the League of Ireland, the players don't have that sort of lifestyle. And even on this show at times, when you're criticising the player, you can often forget that maybe there's something going on in the background in their own. They're out doing a normal job during the day, perhaps if they're part-time and they have family matters of their own. And sometimes there's obviously financial issues at clubs, and players are worried about their mortgages and the likes of that. There can be a lot of pressure. So we have to remember that these are human beings that we're looking at every week, and you don't want to be too critical of them within reason, obviously. And I suppose a promotion like this can help drive home that message that we're all human and everyone has their weaknesses.
Yeah, definitely, you know, and I think with what you're saying there, you know, we're living in a time where people, as you say, it's kind of all the criticisms of players, and I've seen it a lot with the situation going on with Dundalk right now. Mm. Everything is magnified because people don't have that outlet to shout their abuse at, on the pit, you know, at a game and stuff like that. So everything has kind of been magnified a little bit more on social media, and players might take it to heart, you know. But I think also the fact that we're living in an era where people can't go to games, you know, supporters don't have an outlet anymore. So this campaign hopefully will help everybody in the league. It's players, it's supporters, referees, managers, you know, everything. We want this to be as inclusive as possible in the game in Ireland. And, you know, where we've started with heading the game at League of Ireland, we hope at some point this might develop into something that will work down to the grassroots levels as well. You know, this is about getting the community of football in the country together.
Yeah. Look, as I said at the start, I don't want to touch on Dundalk too much because we've covered them quite well tonight. But obviously, you're in the States. I assume you've taken out the Watch LOI. It must be a great resource for yourself.
It is. It's been brilliant. I mean, I don't think I've missed a game. Just the kind of the way that my work schedule is, I've been able to watch most of the games before I head off to work, and it's been fantastic. You know, it's a great advertisement for the league. And long may it continue. I've been out here for 5 years, and it's the first time I don't have to look on a dodgy stream for games. So it's been brilliant. It's been really good.
So with that in mind, obviously you've been keeping a close eye on your own side, Dundalk. What have you made of the goings on in recent weeks?
I mean, it's been hard to watch. I try not, because I've been involved in the kind of, not the boardroom, but I was a staff member in 2012 when all the Save Our Club stuff went on, so I try not to maybe make too many comments about it. And kind of all I'll say, and this might be a little bit politically correct, is as long as they're getting results on the field, I'm happy. So after Sunday's game against Cove, I was a lot happier than I have been the last couple of weeks.
Dean, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Stay safe over in the States, and best of luck with the head in the game. Before you go, if you want to give us the social media details so our listeners can give you a follow.
Yeah, so the Twitter feed is Head in the Game LOI, and Head in the Game 20 is the Twitter account name, and then Head in the Game League of Ireland is the Facebook account.
And your own handle, Dean?
Is Pingu Dean, PINGUDEAN, but don't ask me why Pingu's in it, so that'll be a story for another day, Kieran.
Dean, absolutely brilliant stuff. Very best of luck with all of that, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Cheers, Kieran. Thanks a million.
So a big thanks to Dean for coming on to speak about that very, very important project, and very best of luck with that, Dean. Let's move on to speak about the First Division fixtures this weekend, David. And before we go, we'll be getting your charity bet as well. As ever, barrowandracing.com have kindly sponsored a €10 bet. We'll split a fiver each way, and we'll try and raise a few pound for charity. Let's start with Drogheda against Cove. You've seen Cove in action against Dundalk at the weekend on the Watch LOI service. Did you see enough from Ramblers to suggest they could upset Drogheda here?
Not in the slightest. This is the short answer. Look, it's in United Park. I think Drogheda are a machine this season.
That's something from a Dundalk man to say that.
I know, and it pains me to say it, but it'll be good to have them back in the Premier Division, please God, next year. Look, I can see Drogheda winning this one at a canter. I mean, they're scoring goals for fun. They've only conceded 8 goals all season in 8 games. And they're really, you know,
scoring goals are fun. They've just got threat all over the pitch, particularly with their top man Lions. They ran up some big score lines in recent seasons, and I think this could be one here. I think they'll be comfortable winners against Cove. Let's move on. Athlone against Galway. Two teams that have really struggled this season. Obviously, John Caulfield's come in now. He'll be looking for a win here against an Athlone side who are bottom of the table. It's actually the bottom two in the table playing each other here.
Yeah, it is. And look, you know, Galway are very much the bigger fish in this tie. And you'd have to feel that Caulfield will have them on song, and he'll be looking for them to bounce back. They were unfortunate in the cup. And you know, they did put in a really strong performance, but I fancy them to creep up that table there. I mean, look, I know it's probably too far gone to reach the playoffs this season, but I do feel that they'll be much higher up than ninth. put it that way, come the end of
Athlone,
the season.
Athlone, though, scored 5 goals in their recent win against Wexford in the Cup, 5-3 on the night. So there is obviously a bit of creative spark in that team. They've got some experienced players in there. Darren Meehan and Lee Duffy, who I think scored a couple of goals in that cup tie. They've got Tanner Dogan on loan from Dundalk. And Manning, I believe, got a couple of goals on the night, but he got a few assists as well. He was very, very pivotal in the game. And I already said it a couple of weeks ago after seeing him play. I think he's going to be one of the best players, not just in this first division. I think he'll be a Premier Division player and a real star, just like his brother. I think he's got so much talent. So Athlone have got some good players to work with there. It wouldn't be impossible to suggest that they could actually go and win this game against Galway.
No, and look, they're at home and anything's possible. But, you know, keeping the back door shut is very much the name of the game. And it's something that Athlone have really struggled with this season. Conceding 22 goals, I mean, it's not ideal in
just
eight games.
Yeah.
It's just madness.
If there was ever a goal I was going to be, or a game, sorry, I was looking towards for goals, this would be the one. It wouldn't surprise me to see another 5-3 scoreline either way in this one. I think Galway probably will just have enough to win it on what you've said, Athlone. They just leaked too many goals. Whereas Galway, they've only conceded 9 in the 8 games, so they haven't been overly leaky at the back. It's been the lack of goals. They've only scored 5, and that's a surprise given the players that they did bring in at the start of the season. I think give John Gawfield a while to work with those players, and I think Galway, like you said, will climb up that table. Whether it's playoffs or not, we'll wait and see. But I'll lean towards Galway there, but don't be surprised to see a lot of goals in that game. Bray against Cabinteely. This is a massive game, David, in the first division, because Cabinteely, I feel, if they're going to slip up over the next couple of weeks, this is going to be the period where they slip up. They lost to UCD. They've got a tough trip to Bray, and they're playing Drogheda very, very shortly. This is where Cabinteely either declare themselves as genuine Titan contenders, or they might just slip away from that top spot, which they've held for most of the season so far.
Yeah, and look, you know, the league table doesn't lie. There's 5 points between themselves and Bray. But a win for Bray, all of a sudden the cat is amongst the pigeons. Yeah. And as you say, with a big game against Drogheda coming up, It's a really tasty affair.
For me, there's as many as 5 teams there that could win the title.
Easy. I mean, there's only 5 points in it, so, I mean, anything is possible. But it's the case of consistency in the first division. It's always been the issue over the years. The team that's the most consistent will get the job done. And
so far, that's been Cabinteely, aside from their recent result against UCD. Defensively, excellent. They've conceded 7 in 8 games. They've scored 14. Barnes has been an unbelievable find after losing Rob Manley to get him in and the goals he scored. They've got Kieran Marty Waters. They've got loads of really good players there that, as I said with Ethan when he was on the show a couple of weeks ago, they're not household names, but they're making a name for themselves at Cabinteely. And as I said, if they can get a win here, it just really cements their credentials as title challengers. Personally, I'm actually going to go for a Bray win. Cabinteely beat Bray 4-2 on the opening weekend of the season, but that was a game played in what was almost a mini hurricane. And a couple of the Cabinteely goals, they were long throws into the box, caught Bray out. Look, Cabinteely dealt better with the conditions on the night. They were the better team. They deserved to win. But Gary Shaw got a couple of goals that night. He's been chipping in more regularly this season with Bray than we've seen in the past when he was in the first division with Longford. And he wasn't exactly prolific at Shamrock Rovers or St Pat's either, but he's playing a much bigger role. He's an experienced player in the first division, and I think he'll give Cabinteely plenty to think about on the night. I'm going to go with a Bray win, and as you said, that'll throw the cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah, and that'll lead us nicely on then to the next big one, which is UCD, because they're of course at home to Wexford, and you'd have to say that if UCD could get the win, all of a sudden they're up to tied with Drogheda in second. So I mean, it's a proper tussle there.
Yeah, UCD, they lost out to Sligo in the cup. And Liam Buckley, after the game, he actually came out and he praised UCD. He said the football they played, they looked like a Premier Division side and waiting. And he said he believes they'll be in the mix-up for the title and there's no reason they couldn't win it. For me, UCD have been really impressive this season. We expected it to be a season of transition, but I think they're slowly finding their way into being a side that can challenge for promotion this season. I'd expect them to have too much against Wexford. Seeing Wexford last night, again, they put in a good shift against Longford, but they are just lacking a little bit of quality, particularly in the defensive areas of the field. I mean, they've got a couple of really good players. Doherty last night was phenomenal for Wexford, but we already knew he was their main man. Smith as well, him and Doherty linked up really well. And they had a couple of other players that caught the eye, but I always felt they were vulnerable at the back last night, and we've seen that in the last 6 minutes of the game. They really fell apart against Longford when they should have been leaving Bishopsgate with at least a point last night. So for me, Wexford have just lost a little bit of that solidness they showed early on in the season, because I've praised them a lot on the show this year. But for me, UCD have so many attacking threats. They've got Colin Whelan, they've got Liam Kerrigan, they've got Liam Kerrigan and the other ex-Sligo man as well, Jack Heaney. They've got so many good players, and even their fullbacks offer a lot of threat as well. So for me, UCD, they've got threat from all over the pitch. I expect the students win.
Now let's get on to the one that I know you really want to talk about.
Yeah, as I said earlier on, there's an interesting subplot to Rovers 2 against Longford, because let's go back to before the season started. Rovers 2 were coming into the league, and there was a lot of opposition to their presence in the first division. And one of the clubs that was very, very vocal, I should say, and to the fore of that opposition was Longford Town. I would suggest there's a bit of bad blood off the pitch. Now, I'm not involved on the inside running of the club or anything like that, but just from an outside looking in point of view, I would suggest there's a little bit of bad blood there. Now, whether the players feel any of that, I suggest that they probably don't. And obviously, you don't have supporters in the ground, but the Rovers 2 players got a little bit of stick the opening night of the season when we did have fans in the ground before all this COVID started. And I just wonder if they'll remember that and they'll be right up for this game and want to sicken the Longford fans watching at home.
Yeah, Kieran, if you think about it though, if Bray can do the business on Cabinteely and use beat Shamrock Rovers 2, use our joint top.
Look, at this moment in time, speaking ahead of this game, Longford are very much involved in that title shake-up. I thought after the game in Cove, maybe our chance was gone. But that win in Wexford against Wexford last night, albeit not an overly convincing second half display, it leaves Longford in there with a shout. Because as I said, Cabinteely and Drogheda have each other to play. So if Longford can keep winning and they're taking points off each other, Longford are right up there again. And with Dean Byrne coming back into the team, that's absolutely massive. For me, if Byrne stays fit and Longford's main men stay fit, they've got a huge chance of winning this title. But they'll have to up their performances. But they played a new system last night, as you heard in that interview with Dara earlier on. And if they can continue to find their way in that new system and results start coming their way, Longford have a very good chance. But this is a huge potential banana skin for me. As I mentioned, Rovers 2 will be well up for this one. And there is the possibility they could bring some big players down from the first team as well. If they did say, you know what, Longford weren't too kind to us that opening day of the season down the Bishopsgate. There was a whole thing about the match programme and their name not being included in that and referring them to as a development team. There is a bit of bad blood here. There's no reason they couldn't bring the likes of Scales, Williams and Kavanagh down for this game, as they did against Drogheda. And if those three players are in the starting lineup, this will not be an easy game at all for Longford.
No, and of course, yous have played a game extra.
Yeah,
as well, so it does add a little bit more pressure
100%
to the Longford situation. Do you feel that Longford in terms of consistency is their biggest downfall at the moment?
I suppose we've really touched on it on the show in recent weeks. It was I thought the system was all wrong, so I was really glad to see Dara change that last night, go with three at the back, and it gave us more options in the middle. Zambra was on the ball a lot more. A. Dervin wasn't running around the place like a headless chicken. That wasn't his fault in recent weeks. He was just trying to cover so much ground in the middle because we were lacking an extra body in that midfield. But with Dean Byrne coming in there, he's able to drop in and give an extra body. Sam Burden's able to drop in and give an extra body, and then you've got the fullbacks getting high up the pitch, so when Rob Manley does receive the ball, he can spread it wide and try and get in on the end of a cross. There was just a lot more options for Longford last night. So for me, the system now is perfect. Well, not perfect. It, obviously, when you're playing three at the back, it's going to leave you more vulnerable, particularly down the flanks. And Rovers do have some good wingers in that second team. So that's an area they look to target. But look, that's the risk you're going to take when you play this new system. If Longford can score three goals every game, then if they concede one or two, you'll be happy enough. But it's not been consistency as such, that the system wasn't working, and as I said, they just need to continue working on that new system. Can I get a prediction?
For that particular game?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to go score draw again.
A draw? I'm just going to side with Longford. I'm hoping with Dean Byrne being back in the team, they'll have enough firepower. Rob Manley looked a little bit more like himself last night as well. And they've got the option now of bringing the likes of McCabe off the bench, and he's proven to be a real goal poacher, so I think they'll have enough. But really, I wouldn't be having a bet on this game until I see the team sheet. If those three big names are in there from Rovers, it's going to be tough.
Different ball game then.
Speaking of bets, before we go, let's get your charity bet for the weekend. Proudly sponsored by barrowandracing.com. They're giving us a tenner every week to try and raise money for charity. I think we have about 60 quid in the pot at the moment, but I'd like to get that a little bit higher.
Yeah, we're going to have 200 come Saturday.
Yeah, let's get your bet.
Right, so I feel that for a fiver, we can get some proper proper value here. I fancy draw at a -1 at 13-10. I think that's a cert based on the goals being scored. UCD, definitely. I feel they'll beat Wexford. Now, the game, I did say a score draw for my prediction with Shamrock Rovers second team and Longford. But in this one, I actually fancy under 2.5 goals, Kieran, at even money, because I just feel that I think goals would be at a premium.
Longford won the first meeting of the season 1-0, so it fits the profile anyway.
It does, and with Longford having played a game already this week, you know, tiredness and everything will be there, and there might be a little bit more, shall we say, driven to sit back a little bit more and take a point if the scores are allowing it. But the real bet is that's going to really shake things up. I fancy Bohemians to score first against Shamrock Rovers on Saturday at 12-5.
So just to recap there, you've gone draw at a -1, Bows to score first against Rovers, UCD to win against Wexford, and under 2.5 goals, Rovers 2 and Longford.
Exactly.
And a fiver there, hopefully.
Fiver, I think it was paying out at 120 euros for your
something
fiver.
Something like that, so that'd be great. I'm going to keep it very, very simple this week. The trebles have been so close over the last couple of weeks. It's always been one team just letting me down. So I'm just going to go with a straightforward single this week. I see loads of value in Bohemians to beat Rovers at 5-1. And hopefully that'll top up the pot.
Well, the Bows fans are going to love hearing that.
I called it against Dundalk. I got it right. I think we can safely say that jinx is gone.
Well, time will tell come Saturday.
David, it's been absolutely brilliant having you on the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks at Dundalk, to say the least. I think we've touched on that plenty. And thanks.
For the love of God, don't take any more holidays, because everything falls apart when you leave.
yeah. And thanks to our guests for joining us. Great to be back doing the show, everyone. I hope you enjoyed tonight's episode. If you've got any feedback or comments, leave them on our social channels. You'll find us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as well. And could really appreciate it if you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and to share the show on your social channels and spread the word of BTS Far and Wide. We'll be back again next week with another jam-packed show. Until then, thanks for joining us.